Welcome to Influential She, the podcast about accelerating the influence of women in the world.
You will find us to be a fresh voice in an old conversation.
And here we are, your amazing co-hosts, Deb Soholt
and Mel Schopp. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Influential She. And this is our conversation about accelerating the influence of women in the world. And I'm your co-host, Mel Schopp.
And I'm Deb Soholt, and we are so excited today to open up one of our high leverage practice concepts, which has to do with perspicaciousness. Now, that's a word that you might not even know how to spell or how to even pronounce, but it is a word that we latched onto because we wanted to describe this idea of really rising to about the 10,000 foot level and connecting dots that others might not even see. So it's really the ability to comprehend and act on those things which is unclear to others. And we're really excited about our guest today.
And Deb, I remember when we first started talking about this concept, we were really looking for something that enveloped and really took that entire idea of what we've been doing throughout what we think our careers. But until we came across the word, and then first of all, we have to be really candid. You know, we didn't know how to pronounce it. Then we had to figure out how to spell it. And I know that we've been looking it up the other day as we were writing. It's like, is this still spelled right? But this was what was interesting is that our guest, Stephanie Sanford, who we talked to just the other day, and I'll introduce you in a minute. Stephanie, when you were talking with us and we had actually thought about focusing on a different practice, instantly you said, I think this is the one that best articulates my career. And so I'm going to introduce you really quick, and then I'm going to ask you a question because it's been fascinating in our conversations with you throughout all your work that you've been doing. And I know that right now you are leading the College Board advocacy for initiatives that have to do with policymakers and public and private institutions, organizations, all focused on advancing educational access and opportunity for students. But Stephanie, I know that it's been really more encompassing in all of everything that you've done throughout your career, which is pretty exciting, that if you could tell us a little bit about how you see all those roles, how you've been able to move from that place of just being to be able to connect all those dots. So welcome, Stephanie.
So thank you so much. I loved the idea that you started with a word, perspicaciousness, that could really be an SAT word. Because you may know that the College Board, one of our most well-known programs is the SAT. Now, when we redesigned the instrument about 5 years ago, we did away with SAT words, but we still have kind of a passion for it. And just to tell you a little bit about how we roll here, when I was talking with my team about it, I told them how neat it was that you were focusing on this terrific word. And they immediately dove in. They said, well, actually, perspicacity might actually be a little closer to what they're talking about because it's closer to the feel of the Latin root, perspicac. Just in case you want to know just exactly how we roll here at the College Board, we were absolutely infatuated with the choice of term and with the playfulness of the language. It's a great word. And as I was going through your talismanic 10, to think about sort of which one of those terms sort of most or best describe my career, the idea of being able to comprehend or see things that are either hidden or unexpected connections, some people might call that luck. For me, it's been very much a part of my career, kind of a sense of real curiosity. Of being interested in things and learning about them just a little bit before they became important issues. And I suppose that's luck, but it could also be perspicaciousness. As I see things, whether that was, starting out working on, sort of criminal justice reform and the realization that we needed to move, to work on policy for education and things further up the pipeline long before things went poorly to working on seeing things going on in technology policy in the mid 90s with things like, the way that being able to access IM or AOL was beginning in small ways to change the way people socialized. I got super interested in technology and then the tech boom came to Austin. And I had been doing some writing and thinking about that a little ahead of time. And so, in some ways, as I again look through your site and the thinking that you all were doing, the term and the idea just really jumped out at me.
So say, Stephanie, so talk a little bit about, you know, you brought up this word curiosity. So when you think about being perspicacious, you're really noticing and then kind of realizing that something's happening here that we should probably pay closer attention to. Talk about, you know, if you were giving some advice to women to be influential, how could they start to hone that curiosity?
Well, I think that I'd like to come at it in kind of two ways. One is curiosity, curiosity in small ways and curiosity in large ways. Curiosity in a sense of what's going on here, but also curiosity of what else could I do here? If I were to sort of pinpoint times in my career that were huge leverage points, one of them was, you know, I was a graduate student and I was, I'd gone back to school during the tech boom to look at the sort of intersection of technology and civic life. And, I was tapped to be a student escort for, a woman named Deborah Willingham, who at the time was the top ranking woman at Microsoft. And, literally they called me and they said, would you be a student escort? And that means call her people and make sure that she gets picked up at the airport to her hotel and to her speech to the MBAs and then back to the airport. And so, I called her people and I said, you know, I'm Stephanie, I'm your student escort. And then I thought, well, gosh, I'm going to have her for a day. What else might we do? And so I asked her people if we could build a day for her. And they said, sure. And so, what I did was at the time I was a graduate student, working as a graduate research assistant outside the president's office at the University of Texas. And I organized a day of events from, you know, a meeting with the president of the university to a coffee with the executive team. Then we talked to the chief technology officers of the branch campuses. Then she gave her speech to the MBAs. Then we got together the Women in Technology Roundtable. We had her then meet with a reporter from the local paper, the Austin Statesman. Then I took her back to the airport, handed her a Nancy Griffith CD and thanked her for coming to Texas. That was on a Friday afternoon. And on Monday, her office called back and asked what I was doing for the summer. And that, what I ended up doing was spending the summer at Microsoft, which then introduced me. You know, I spent that whole summer working on helping write a white paper about the role of technology in higher education. I then came back to Austin and wrote a couple of articles in the newspaper. And then, you know, the chief of staff to the lieutenant governor saw them, called me and said they were putting together a technology committee and would I be there and staff it? And that just sort of launched a whole second phase of my career, from literally, you know, building out a day based on, you know, a call to pick somebody up at the airport. And so, so there's curiosity to be interested in something like technology or the role of technology in public institutions. There's also the curiosity to say, this looks like an interesting opportunity. I'm going to have the senior ranking woman at that time, and I guess today too, one of the, you know, largest, most influential companies in the field that I'm studying. What might I do with that? And I think that, you know, that's probably the most vivid moment. But that sense of, well, I could do that, is to really be on the lookout for little moments that you can turn into big ones.
So, Stephanie, what do you think gave you that ability to be, so there's a piece of this, it's both curiosity, but there's also a lot of brazenness in there to be able to say, hey, I think I can do that. So who or what inspired that in you? Because I know we may have listeners who will go, oh my gosh, I could never do that. But we think this is a trait you can learn. I'm curious.
So brazenness is funny. When I was a little girl, people were concerned I was a bit willful and so
I love that word.
Which is funny. I have my niece Madeline and they put the same critique on her when she was a little girl. And, so a few things, it didn't seem like I thought, well, coming to campus anyway, I'm sitting right here. Why don't I try this? I do think I was blessed to, I knew my great grandmothers. My last great grandmother died when I was 20. I was very close to both of my grandmothers, one of whom died when I was 40 and one died when I was 48. And And I have a terrific mom. And so I had a lot of women around me, even though they were concerned I was a bit willful. They also said, you can be and do whatever you want to do. And so I think that creates a little bit of brazenness, but it also, I think, is tempered with some sense of reality. Because I remember vividly my mom telling me when I was a little girl, you know, I could be whatever I wanted to be. I was a kid, you know, a little kid in the early 70s. And I went back and thought about it and I said, I can be anything. It was the height of the ERA. There was a real, strand of feminism then. And I came back and I said, okay, I've decided I want to either be an astronaut or quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. And so, and they were like,
you can be anything you want to be.
And they're like, you can be anything you want to be except that. And the funny thing was, you know, they're like, well, you really can't be either of those. And what's interesting was I certainly at 5'4" and was not going to be Roger Staubach as much as I wanted to be. Turns out that even though it wasn't considered that I could be an astronaut, you know, Sally Ride, by the time I graduated from high school, Sally Ride had become the first woman astronaut.
But, you know, Stephanie, it's really kind of extraordinary that you had these really strong women influencing that you can be anything, because many career trajectories for women at that time were like be a teacher, be a nurse, be a secretary. Yeah. It was a really limited viewpoint of what was possible for women. So, you know, I think the women of today probably have more of that kind of launching pad of women behind them, such as what you had.
Yeah. And it's funny, they weren't. My maternal grandmother ran for county clerk of York, Nebraska, and was very involved in the community. She then, when she moved to Austin, sold real estate. That's what my mom does now. And so in the sense of path-breaking career women, they really weren't. They were very strong. They were hilarious. I think that's probably the other thing, is that I think it was Peggy Noonan that wrote that that humor is the shock absorber of life, and that was certainly the way that that the women in our family really were. Of all the things I remember, we always laughed at the end of them, and so there was a sense of, that not only could you be anything, but if it was worth doing, it was worth having fun doing. And those are, I feel very blessed to have had. Wasn't an idyllic upbringing exactly, but those two things of a belief sort of in your own power or efficacy. I mean, to believe that you could figure stuff out and that you could have fun doing it. And if it didn't work out, or you stubbed your toe, or you found out somebody had to break it to you that you weren't going to be Roger Staubach, that, you know, you went on to find the next thing.
Stephanie, I think that we know that, sometimes those things that shape us early on, and as people are listening, they're trying to pick out of their minds, okay, what are those things that have influenced me along the way to be perspicacious, and they can't really find that. Do you see opportunities or ways in which women can still, or anybody for that fact, but particularly women, could potentially hone this high leverage practice, do different things? What are some specific things that they may be able to do to help them to think about ways in which they can make this part of their, either their lives or their careers?
So a few things. One is, I do think then this larger sense of curiosity, maybe in its more traditional sense, which is to read widely and be interested in things. I find that, we talk about in our work at the College Board, designing new courses around the notion of knowledge, skills, and agency, right? That said in a way that my mom would say it, you need to know things, you need to know how to do things, and then you need to apply them. That gives you the confidence that you can make a difference in the world. And I think there's real magic and importance in all three of those things. Because if you do know things, it makes you more confident to speak up and try things. If you know how to do things, right, then you have more confidence in your ability. Once you know how to do one thing, it's easier to do the second and third. And then the result of those two things is a sense of agency, right? Not self-esteem, but sort of agency and confidence that comes from having accomplished something, and that creates a virtuous cycle. So then you've been able to accomplish something, which then says, wow, okay, so I need to know more, and I can learn how to do more, and I can accomplish more. I would say, you know, that has certainly been a dynamic for me. And it's one now, you know, particularly in things where, you know, our new AP Computer Science Principles course, which is specifically designed to diversify the ranks and the pipeline of young people working on computer science, particularly women and underrepresented folks. Is to be able to do that, and animating those three things through, you know, through learning things, learning how to apply it, and then doing community projects, that we believe that not only builds confidence, it builds effectiveness.
But with that, Stephanie, you're really talking about this idea of perspicaciousness, that you're doing multiple things connecting, like community service in relationship to the concept, the learning, the actual building your depth of knowledge around it, opening up your eyes, and then the application. Doing those yep. things can help you to start to connect disparate dots where other people might not, versus just staying in your one tunnel vision lane. I think that's just really such a good point about how much you have to be curious to learn and to open your mind to thinking about something different.
I think that's right. And then, and by knowing more, then, you know, we said a term, sort of brazenness. If you go back to that, you know, to that the immensely influential day in my life, that really was one of the real acceleration points of my career. If you think about that, I mean, if you really break down what I did that day, you know, when I say it all in sort of a 90-second riff, it sounds like a lot. But if you think about, I mean, I studied up on, you know, on this woman and on this company. And I knew the way to the airport, you know, and I knew who the executive officers were, and I knew the woman who answered the phone, who could help me put it together. I mean, if you break it down into those little spots, I mean, it sounds like a big thing because it all happened in one day. But really, with the exception of interacting with the newspaper, any of those things, I suspect an ambitious graduate student whose GRA assignment was sitting in Main 101 of the UT Tower could have done that. I mean, it's like knowing what to do. If you really think about it, I mean, it's making appointments and booking rooms and sending invitations and, you know, and making the invitation compelling enough to want someone to come. You know, then it's having a little bit of a real passion about where I'm from and wanting to, you know, I wanted Texas and UT to make a good impression. That's why I got a singer-songwriter CD at the end. And again, I don't think that, I mean, if you really break it down that way, and maybe as we think about this concept, if you see something just as this gigantic thing, oh my gosh, I couldn't have planned this humongous day. It really was just a series of little steps that probably just about anyone would have known how to do. And it's about, you know, sort of having the confidence of once you do the first one, wow, that got set up. Okay, well, I could do this next one. Well, then I could do the next one, you know? And so if anything, probably in the greater leap was then to go spend a summer in Seattle, which is a city I'd never been to before. Sight unseen.
Well, and Stephanie, what I love about this story is that, you know, not only was it about thinking about how could I really nail this experience and dig deeper mm-hmm. and understand more to make it a great day, but it was also embedded in being gracious and just trying mm-hmm. to do great hosting, that mm-hmm. someone would feel comfortable and feel honored and respected, like ending with a CD at the end of the day and those kinds of things. So it's also taking skills that women are really great at and mm-hmm. putting that into also what you're trying to achieve with some level of ambition, mm-hmm. which I think is so great. It's such a wonderful story.
Well, that's a funny thing, because my grandmothers and my mom are all great hostesses too. And that's probably a controversial thing to say, but that I hadn't really thought of it until you just said it. And that is, there is something to that, that you can be anything you want to be, and you can be in, you know, in technology or government or work at the College Board or any of those things, but to also embrace, you know, what could be seen as a potentially a traditional type women's role. I didn't think of it when I did it as I'm going to do a traditional women's role, but there was a sense of how do I make this a great experience uh, for for these guests. And I do think that was probably part of it, part of, you know, what made it so, so fun and memorable for them.
You know, Stephanie, one of the things, both Mel and I have been involved in the political arena, and in talking to you earlier, you said you've, you know, kind of been a junkie of really being in public discourse and being so interested in that topic of politics overall and just, you know, the arena of how that all happens. And Mel and I have spent quite a bit of time talking about, you know, being politically perspicacious instead of being a political animal that's always plotting or somebody who is just trying to be politically correct and always wordsmithing to make sure that it's right. But really to be perspicacious within this political arena, tell us some where that's kind of happened in your life or your reflections on what it's like to be perspicacious with politics.
I think that's such a timely question. I'm not sure I've ever heard it asked in, you know, with this fabulous word. But I think it's particularly important and particularly difficult now. I have over the course of my career worked for both Republicans and Democrats and was brought on in each case to work on a particular issue or set of issues. And actually, you know, the perspicaciousness is, it was the essence, in a way, of why I was brought on in these different roles, not to be a partisan, you know, or a political person. But I love figuring out big public problems. You know, how would we make progress on that? And so I've been drawn to places where there's not an obvious right left vector. Right. Or trying to, you know, please one, you know, one side of the aisle or the other, but rather how is it that you can get a, you know, get a broad and diverse, you know, set of people to agree on what the goal is and on a way to get there. And I have found throughout my career, people really hungry for that because there's a way, you know, there are then ways to make progress. And so I find that. What's now is that you don't seem to, I'm not even sure what right and left means in our current environment, but there is a hunger for some problem solving. So you know, we've been working on this notion of what we call two codes, and if you think of you know sort of the Constitution as the code of our democracy and technology as the code of our economy, it's like well you know these are two things that seem you know, either separate or lately, like hugely in conflict. And what we, you know, at the College Board, we've been thinking, wow, how do we prepare young people to navigate this complicated world that they're coming into, and particularly this sort of complicated time that our democracy is in. And we've really it's been surprising how resonant it has been when we talk about these two things this way. I was at the National Constitution Center yesterday. And there, I mean, very obviously, we're talking about the code of our democracy. We launched there a version of the interactive constitution, which is, you know, it's using technology to make the constitution come alive and be interactive. And there were 3,500 kids there for Constitution Day, and a lot of them sort of interacting with this new tool. And there's a sense that, I mean, Tom Friedman wrote about the piece, or wrote about the idea earlier this year. And we've been just amazed at the resonance of it because it doesn't say either or. It looks at what's going on in the world and says, wow, what would young people need to know and be able to do to be able to be successful and be able to navigate and ultimately lead in this complicated moment? And in sort of a very direct way, I mean, it was the number, it was like for 3 days in a row, it was the top most popular article in the New York Times when Tom Friedman wrote about it. The New York Times did a prompt to students, and hundreds of students wrote in and said how relevant it was, and that these were the forces that they were concerned about. And then we even heard some from friends and colleagues who were in the humanities saying, "I'm so glad to see that people are saying that there's a role for the humanities or something other than STEM, STEM, STEM." And so, you know, as I as I've been now, you know, in my career for 30 years, those moments, those kinds of connections that give, that help us find a way forward, for an, to for a, you know, a broad and potentially unexpected set of supporters has always been a hallmark of my career. And this this thing we've been working on now with the intersection of computer science and government and politics is the very latest, and I think in some ways the most resonant of ones that I've been involved with.
You know, Stephanie, we could talk to you all day. It's just fascinating what you've been able to do. But
you're going to have to come back.
You have to come back because your conversation around this has really pulled so much of this together. I think I could say that the politically perspicacious star just keeps on rising, and there you are. So you've been amazing today, and we do want to be cognizant of your time. I did take something away from this today that I really think that willful should have been one of our high leverage mm-hmm. practices, because that's something that's really fascinating to me. I think I have a granddaughter that fits into that category. So that was a great takeaway from how I would think about you in the future.
Well, so, it's really been fun. I've so enjoyed talking with you all, and really, I mean, happy to come back. I think you're really onto something here, and I think your willingness to be imaginative and even a little playful with the language is incredibly smart and insightful, because that will get people's attention. I think that, you know, the vividness of language will make people pay attention to look at it and engage with it and think about it. And that was what really drew me to this term and drew me to talking with you all.
Thank you, Stephanie. And thanks to all of our listeners who are going to participate in this. We're really anxious for everybody to be able to hear the words of wisdom from Stephanie, but also just the great stories you've been able to share with us today. So we're going to challenge our listeners with one thing today. We want you to look up the word perspicacious and focus on being able to spell that by the time that you're done with Stephanie's podcast. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in to another episode of Influential She, and we hope that you'll join us again.
Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed our podcast, we'd be so jazzed if you rate us on whatever app you use to find us. And hey, be sure to tell all your friends about Influential She.
And please visit us at InfluentialShe.com. And follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. And you know what? If you come up with a new one, please let us know. In the meantime, remember, stay influential.